This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
5 a.m. I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
PMS, pregnancy, menopause. Being a woman is a lot. Olly supports you and yours with expert solutions for every age and life stage. They just launched two new products exclusively at Walmart. Period Hero combats bloat, mood swings, and more during PMS. And Balance Perimeno to support hormonal balance, mood, and metabolism during perimenopause. Grab yours at Olly.com.
Olly!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Marianne Rafferty, live in Los Angeles. Multiple law enforcement agencies responding to reports of an active shooter in northern Idaho near the town of Coeur d'Alene. Officials there say fire crews were responding to a brush fire near that town today. That's when multiple firefighters were ambushed and shot. The Kootenai Sheriff's Office saying two people are confirmed dead, several others injured. We're waiting to get more information on others who may have been shot or injured in the shooting. It's not clear so far how many others may have been hurt. Officials also saying it isn't clear how many suspects there could be, but the Sheriff's Office saying multiple law enforcement agencies from local to federal authorities are there on the scene. The Sheriff saying they are ready to neutralize the threat. Earlier, the Sheriff even came out and appealed to anyone who comes in contact who may have the shooter in their sights and can take them out to take them out. So they are really trying to find who, you know, if there's one, if there's more, whoever is responsible for shooting at and killing first responders after setting what appears to be an intentional fire to draw them in. People near Coeur d'Alene and in western Idaho being told to shelter in place. Officials saying there are people trying to leave the mountain also where this ambush happened. No word on how many people may have been coming down, how many people were rescued. Officials say the fire, though, is still burning as the shooting continues because they are completely focused on finding the shooter or shooters at this point and making sure everyone is safe. We're going to go now to Sean Larkin. He's a former Tulsa police lieutenant. He's a host of Patrol Live with Sean Larkin, and he also lives in the area. Sean, I spoke to a friend earlier who has property not far from Coeur d'Alene. She said that there were alerts on a local, you know, citizen app letting people know what was going on, and she just couldn't believe it. She was in shock.
Yeah, exactly. This is a very quiet area, and that's one of the reasons I enjoy spending my summer up here. I come up here May through October, and honestly, like the Fourth of July parade that's going to be coming this week, this area is beyond patriotic. The support for law enforcement, the support for the military, first responders, and things like that. And so this word, you know, this incident, it traveled very, very quickly. Everybody up in this area where I'm at, you know, within moments was already group texting about it and so forth. And, you know, I listened to the grueling, just heartbreaking audio of, you know, when the firemen first got on scene and then started taking fire. And, you know, it's a very small, tight community. And, you know, it's roughly 55,000 people here in Coeur d'Alene, you know, Hayden just to the north, Spokane Valley, then Spokane, you know, about 30 miles away. And so it is really, you know, just kind of shocked everybody in the area.
And I guess for people that don't understand the terrain, because you can tell by looking at the pictures and the video coming in, that it's a very densely, you know, there are bushes, trees. I mean, it's not going to be easy if someone is hiding out and just taking shots off to try and find them, right?
No, correct. Yeah, I'm sitting in my car right now, you know, in a parking lot. All I'm looking at are pine trees just everywhere around me. And that's part of the beauty of why people enjoy being up here. But for a situation like this, this is what makes it hard for law enforcement. You know, I don't want to overly duplicate everything that somebody has said, but this person that's laying out there, they've got that advantage. They've got the high ground advantage. They're armed with a rifle. You know, they've got the mindset. This is what they want to do. And so, you know, me working in a city like, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, we have a police department of 830 officers roughly. You know, we're in an urban area. When we have to respond to an active shooter or any type of shooting incident, we've got armored vehicles that can just literally drive right up to where the suspect's at. You know, we've got that type of ballistic cover. In a situation like this, all the law enforcement that's now here in this area, they're not afforded that. You know, this guy could be laying in wait at any place out there. And, you know, and I know there's some conversation about waiting for nighttime, night vision and things like that. But you know, it's close to 3 hours from now until it's pitch black here.
So I guess that was my next question. You know, as we hear of the federal troops arriving on the ground, what are they focusing on right now? What can they do right now? And what are they trying to do? Or are they going to try and maybe wait until nightfall and use that night vision?
Honestly, I mean, just as the sheriff had mentioned in the press conference, you know, if they get an opportunity, I assure you that any officer out there on scene is going to, you know, put this guy down or guys down if they can. They're going to neutralize him. That's the thing on an active shooter, whether it's something like this up in the woods, you know, a horrific school situation, the ones that happen in the mall, their job is if you get an opportunity to put the person down, you put him down. You stop that threat. You know, until then, you know, that their options are, you know, not favorable to them. You know, it's going to be difficult to put, you can't put a helicopter over it. You know, if this guy's got a rifle, like we've heard, you know, the pilot in a helicopter would obviously take shots. So, you know, I think Chad Ayers mentioned the possibility of using a drone, you know, with some sort of FLIR capabilities, you know, and that will be an option. But again, we're 40 miles, I believe, or roughly south of the Canadian border, and it doesn't get like dark here until roughly 10 o'clock at night. So that's still 3 hours away.
So they've got plenty of time to try and do some of these things that you were talking about. I mean, with, you know, federal authorities coming in, wouldn't they have some of those capabilities, like the drone capabilities?
No, absolutely. And I assure you that local law enforcement will have drone capabilities, you know, and obviously I'm not there on scene. And, you know, they very well could have drones up and about right now, just trying to get an overhead view. But with that canopy of the trees and the brush that's out in that area, you know, if this guy is just underneath a tree, it's going to be very difficult to spot until nightfall happens, when they're able to use, you know, that FLIR capability.
All right, Sean, thank you so much for being with us, for your expertise. And we are definitely, our hearts go out to those two firefighters that were killed and, you know, one in surgery. And we're waiting to get more information on any other possible casualties. Thank you so much for joining us, and stay safe.
Thank you, guys. Good night.
Yeah, thank you. And if you're just joining us, earlier, first responders were ambushed responding to a forest fire that looks purposely set, and they were ambushed upon arriving to try and fight that fire. We have received word that two firefighters were killed and that there is at least one in surgery, and no word on how many other casualties there may be. We also heard from the local sheriff that there were people hiking on that mountain, that there were civilians on the mountain when the shooting started, and they were waiting for them to come down. Hopefully all of those people made it off that mountain safely as well. We're going to be monitoring the situation. It is a situation that is still unfolding. There is an active fire burning, but the focus right now is on finding the shooter or shooters responsible for killing and harming first responders that showed up to put that fire out. We'll be bringing you updates throughout the night, but for now, we're going to go back to One Nation, Already in Progress.
And they can be regularized. I don't want them to become citizens. If you enter the country illegally, unless you're a dreamer, I don't think you should ever become a citizen. But there's no reason not to regularize most of these people. And it would come with the conditions that you just noted. If you commit a crime, you're out of here forever. And you've got to go through extensive background vetting, and you've got to work. And I think that is the sweet spot. Now, there are a lot of people who don't want to hear regularization. They call it amnesty. Not amnesty. President Trump gets it's not amnesty either. It's simply regularization. We actually need people. We are blessed to have most of our migrants come from countries that evolved out of the Judeo-Christian culture from our South. They are actually very easily assimilated. And for people like me, living in California for almost 30 years, just 29, just 1 year short of 30, we're very used to migrant communities. And most migrant communities are absolutely law-abiding and hardworking. Yep. But those that have the criminal deportation orders, they've got to go. The president is right.
Absolutely. Something else the president's doing historic, and again, I'm being optimistic, but he could really rebalance the Middle East. We can't believe what we went through last weekend. I still haven't really processed all the success and the boldness of the move. But Dave Ignatius, who I think is very fair and he's very experienced, writes for The Washington Post. He's seen a lot of presidents, wrote a lot of books about it. Here's what he said we have in terms of an opportunity to change things.
This action has walked the United States onto what I would say is the slipperiest slope in the world. Three previous presidents have considered precisely this scenario. They're the ones who developed the weapons and the battle plan. This was something inherited by President Trump, and each of them pulled back because of the uncertainties associated with the action. They decided it just wasn't worth doing.
So they pull back because he did it. Iran's on its back. Israel's closer to peace. And we have identified, if not destroyed, their nuclear program, exactly where all 12 sites are, three in particular. Do you think this is the beginning of a change in the Middle East?
I do, Brian. I also think it's the most important week of Donald Trump's life. When he gave the go order, he changed fundamentally the trajectory of the world. We're not going to have to be dealing with a nuclear group of fanatics who are theologically extreme for the rest of our days, and our children, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren won't have to deal with that. He established the Trump doctrine, which is don't even think about going nuclear if you're anywhere in the world. We're going to knock it down. And Iran is revealed not as a paper tiger. I mean, they've got a significant number of people with guns. But they could not protect themselves against the Israelis, and they could not do material damage, although the loss of even one life is terrible, and almost 30 Israelis died in the attacks of the ballistic missiles. He proved that Iran can't really attack comprehensively. They can only use terror and random missile shots. So I think what Donald Trump did by putting the icing on the cake that the Israelis baked is change the future of the world. And I do think Middle East peace is going to spread out from the Abraham Accords just as quickly as like lily pads multiplying in a pond. It's just going to go and go and go.
If we could just get a resolve to Gaza, when we have some type of cessation of fighting along with some type of alternative to lead, then I think we're ready to go rapidly, because that tour through the Gulf states about a month and a half ago was really telling. They're done with terror. They seemingly done with terror. They want to get down to business. Final thought, you?
I think you're right. The Israelis have lost more than 400 soldiers fighting to get back the 20 live hostages and the 30 who are presumed dead and whose bodies are in Gaza. They will never give up until they get those 20 people back. That war could go on a long time. But it's in the hands of a remnant who've been cut off from Iran. So I'm hoping it moves quicker than we have previously had a right to wish for, Brian.
Yeah, just don't make I know we have to get those hostages out. I'm not forgetting about that. But there's got to be some type of resolve there. I believe talks could heat up this week. You, it always great. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
We have every country in the world, just like Donald Trump has said, who wants to do a deal with us. Now, here's the point. I have a deal. Done.
So we're confident that the deal we struck with our Chinese partners will help us to work toward resolving that national emergency.
The president is doing peace deals, tax deals, trade deals. So he's done a peace deal. I think we'd have the tax deal done by July 4th, and then we can finish with the trade deals.
Well, question. Are there too many cooks in the kitchen? That seems to be the sentiment, according to some, on the inside about trade. As Trump's negotiating team of Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary Howard Lutnick, Commerce, Jamison Greer, who's solid trade, they appear in some cases to be bumping into each other and gumming up negotiations. They talk about that in Politico this week. The world leaders are getting impatient. For example, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz now pushing the European Union to just strike a deal with President Trump within the next 3 days to ensure that Europe doesn't end up, quote, with an unbalanced agreement that only benefits President Trump. Despite all of this, the White House says they reached a deal with China, the framework anyway, and have imminent plans to reach agreements with a set of 10 major trading partners. Joining us now to talk to me about this is the host of Kudlow at 4 o'clock Eastern Time on Fox Business, a man that used to work full time and get full benefits from Donald Trump himself at the White House, although the federal government gave you those benefits. And I'm glad you didn't go back this time for America and for Fox. But Larry, what are your thoughts? What do the insiders tell you? And these are your friends.
I think the Politico story is a lot of BS. I mean, really, just BS. There's always a trade team. I was on the trade team in the first term. Bob Lighthizer, who was our team leader, he was the U.S. trade rep and a genius at trade. Nobody's like Lighthizer. But Steve Mnuchin at Treasury, Wilbur Ross at Commerce, Kevin Hassett, who was then at the Council of Economic Advisors, Peter Navarro had his little manufacturing thing. And we met every week in the West Wing. And then we branched out, and we each kind of developed relationships. And
But what's the holdup then, Larry, with these guys?
Well, the holdup is they don't want to give what we want. I mean, the holdup is you have to cut a good deal to get it past the president, who is very sharp on these issues because he's been looking at it for at least 10 years. So the European Union is a good example. They know full well that Jameson Greer, the special trade rep today, and Howard Lutnick really have a little more play over there. Doesn't mean that Scott Bessent won't get involved, but they know who they're negotiating with. Tariffs are a big issue with the European Union. An even bigger issue is non-tariff barriers. There are all these regulations about fish and fowl and meat and air, climates, and all kinds of things they throw at you. And by the way, we're in the middle of a tax negotiation, very important tax.
A big, beautiful bill.
It looks, well, yes, but part of that bill is the so-called revenge tax on European countries that are taxing our companies in Europe, a digital services tax, mm-hmm. mostly our techie companies, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, and so forth. I don't think we've made the deal yet. I hear progress, and I hear European Union tariff progress, i.e. Right. tariffs coming down. I don't think it's quite complete yet. But there's positive news. That's what I want to say.
Go ahead.
Positive news. I think the USMCA revisions are moving along. That's going to take longer.
Mexico and Canada.
The deal's not up until next year, so you've got some elbow room there. And the president himself, if he needs to pause more, like July 9th is the end of the pause,
yep.
the famous pause. Okay. If he needs, if he thinks the trade people are making enough progress, you know, in good faith with Europe, with Japan, which
India.
Is always difficult, with India, which is always difficult, with Korea, which is always
These
difficult.
These are allies.
These are allies. But believe me, when it comes to trade, I've been there, I've done that. They're very tough. They're killers, okay? They're representing their country. Now, if the president thinks that progress is being made,
right.
honest, good faith progress, he will extend the pause. That's my guess, okay? He will extend the pause. And that's a good thing.
But I have a...
Better to have a good deal, you know.
Gotcha.
Better
no,
to have
he,
a good
he,
deal.
He's
Take
to
a little longer,
deadlines.
No problem. The stock market is roaring right now because there are some... You know, the China thing looks like it may be resolved, okay? It's not fully trade deal like we did at phase one in the first term. But in terms of export restrictions,
right.
It looks to me like
well,
that's
well, Larry,
almost
on
done.
China, they just keep saying we're going to give you... we're going to start selling you rare earth again, and they don't do it.
That's true.
So this has been about a month now.
That's true.
And our tech center and our military is getting impatient. We got to do a Manhattan Project to get our own rare earth.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And that's what Doug Burgum, the Interior Secretary, wants to do. We have plenty of rare earths.
Right.
We have the Iron Range in Minnesota. We got the Dakotas. We got Wyoming.
He's got to mine it.
We got Montana. That's where I was married. We know all about it. We can dig them out. They're all there. China, however, is slow. I think Bessent is saying now, they're unlocking. Okay. Now, we, on the other hand, have to be very careful not to allow them, not to export
yep.
NVIDIA-type semiconductor, advanced semiconductors. Those are, this is what Lighthizer taught me years ago. Those are the family jewels. The highest, best design chips
right.
are so important. They're the crown
jewels.
But
that's
jewels.
What they want.
They're the of course they do.
Yeah.
And we can give them level two and level three chips, okay, but we cannot give them
right.
the jewelry box. That's so important.
I created a problem for you. Because President Trump likes to watch this show. He sees how sharp you are. He's like, I need this guy back on my team. You're going to start getting calls again.
I have to tell you, I talked to him recently, and he said to me, your show's great. He always watches every chance he gets.
While running the country. It's unbelievable. Larry, great to see you.
Thanks.
Show
man.
Is fantastic. Number one in Fox Business.
Thank you.
And number one in the business world.
Thank you
very
Appreciate
much.
It very much.
All right, meanwhile, coming up, what socialist shocker in New York means that socialist winning. For the entire nation, Sid Rosenberg will weigh in. He is Mr. New York. And the entire landscape of college sports is changing, and no one knows that better than Auburn's basketball coach, Bruce Pearl. But he's more than a basketball coach. He'll explain. And Don't forget to catch me on tour. History, Liberty, and Left. Thanks to everyone in Dayton who came out. We had a great time. Next stop, Will Cain joins me in Dallas, Texas, August 23rd at the Big Theater there. Richmond, Virginia, September 27th. Larry, I give you 10% off if you could just cut one of these trade deals for us. BrianKilmeade.com. Just cut one. Japan, anybody.
I'm coming.
Good. New York is getting muddy out. There's L.A., but it's always kind of
sunny out. And I don't want to hurry no more. Kingdom Matt.
Yep. A socialist shocker for New York City. They could ripple across our nation, causing trouble for Democrats and basically our country if they're successful. Anti-Semitic sympathizer, New York State Assemblyman Zohran Mamdani, stuns with a Democratic primary win for mayor in New York City. It's the largest, most influential city in the world.
You're a proud Democratic socialist. Do you think that is a platform that would work for other candidates running in other parts of the country?
Absolutely. I think ultimately this is a campaign about inequality.
So when people say democratic socialist, do you like capitalism?
No, I have many critiques of capitalism. What I'm focused on is making the city affordable for everyone.
Usually people duck out of that. His socialist promises. Check this out. Social workers to replace police, finally. City-run grocery stores. I'm so tired of those for-profit places. $70 billion of debt to fund affordable housing. Yeah, it's going to cost, by the way, $100 billion. $30 minimum wage and $65 million on medical transgender treatment. This is actually my checklist. What does this mean for Democrats nationwide? Let's ask New York City radio host WABC. He's number one, by the way, and a council member of President Trump's Holocaust Memorial Museum, Sid Rosenberg. Sid, you know Mayor Adams. You met with many times Governor Cuomo. Are you shocked this happened?
Oh, God, no. Not in New York City. I mean, New York City, this is a haven for that. When I watch the pro-Hamas people, Brian Kilmeade, and thank you for having me. When I watch the pro-Hamas people walk up and down our streets all day long, right, with very little pushback, Mayor Adams, it doesn't surprise me that an anti-Semite, anti-capitalist, socialist would win in New York City. So when they go, but wait a second, how does this work with the Democratic Party? Well, in a sanctuary city, it works. It works in New York. It works with Brandon Johnson in Chicago. It works with Karen Bass and Newsom in Los Angeles. But if you're not a sanctuary city and you're an actual, you know, capitalist gaining city in America, this doesn't work.
He didn't get poor people. People under 50,000 voted for Cuomo. He didn't get the black vote. Most voted for Governor Cuomo. So he wins with the affluent. And he's rich. It's a Nepo baby from Uganda, comes here. His dad's a radical Columbia professor. So what is attractive about this? New York happens to be, and you know this, the most, there's more Jews in New York than any other city in the world outside Israel.
The Jews in New York are bad Jews. I'm going to say it right now. President Trump, if you're watching, we're bad Jews here in New York.
But not you.
Not me. I'm a great Jew. I've been back and forth to Israel three times since October the 7th. I love Israel. New York Jews generally don't even care about Israel. But look, who's voting for him? You're right. Affluent people, but young people. All those kids in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, all those kids on the Upper East Side, they have money and they're young and they love the enthusiasm. Cuomo, no enthusiasm. He's walking dead. Mayor Adams has been a crappy mayor, to put it very, very nicely. This guy, they seem to like.
Well, Adams and Sliwa. Sliwa's got a alley, 28% could get him the win for the Republican. And I think Mayor Adams is revitalized under Trump. I think you should give him a fresh shot, Him and Curtis, we'll see what happens.
Well, you know I'm endorsing Curtis Sliwa. I love Curtis Sliwa. He has fought for the better part of five decades to protect New Yorkers. And again, I love Trump. I adore Trump. But he can't fix what Eric Adams helped break after de Blasio for the better part of 3 years.
So let's talk about something else that's passionate for you. You mentioned you've been to Israel three times. What do you think the future of that country is? They've been running back and forth to bomb shelters for 12 straight days. They finally get their head out, and they're looking and thinking about the hostages. And they're also wondering about America. Are we going to be an anti-Semitic haven? Are our colleges at Columbia to Harvard?
It's the same answer as Mamdani, and that is it depends on the city. You can't do more. Oh, my God, me at the Western Wall. You can't do more for Israel, for the Jews in the United States, than President Trump has done. He's an amazing, amazing friend of ours. We love him, okay? But the truth is, in a city like this, Alvin Bragg's a DA. In a state like this, Letitia James is the AG. It doesn't matter, right? And if you have a guy like Mamdani as mayor. And the other issue is the judges. Brian, you know what we saw this week in New York? Mahmoud Khalil, was once again on the streets of New York City,
Columbia
terrorizing Jews. That's right. So if the judges are not going to help us and the DAs and the AGs are not going to help us, there's just so much Trump can do. So these sanctuary cities like New York, Chicago, L.A., we're still going to have our problems.
So Donald Trump cracking down on the colleges, just real quick, do you think that him, Harvard, doing a deal with Columbia, do you think there might be a resolve there?
I don't, because I don't trust them. It's kind of like Iran. Now, look, Iran has held true for the last couple of days. Fantastic. We hope it stays that way. But I got to see a record of weeks, of months, of years before I can trust Harvard, Columbia, Iran, all these different people that have proved to me in the past. No good.
WABC every morning. Sid has the number one show, and I'm lucky enough to follow him on the fantastic lineup with the number one station in the country,
yeah,
by the way.
Well, you're the best.
All right, thank you.
You're great on TV. You're great on radio. Look how handsome he is, too. Look at his.
I was going to say. And that was in the prompter. That's why he said that. Good job, Sid. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Next, I gave the VCR my cords and my tapes to Tommy Lahren. It's the media moments that really matter. Don't move. You're watching One Nation. Bring up the music.
Won't be offended.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Marianne Rafferty. Multiple law enforcement agencies responding to reports of an active shooter in northern Idaho. Officials say fire crews were responding to a brush fire near Coeur d'Alene today. And that's when they were ambushed and shot. The Kootenai Sheriff's Office saying two firefighters were shot and killed. At least one was in surgery. It's not clear right now how many others may have been hurt. Officials also say it isn't clear how many suspects may be out there. But the Sheriff's Office saying multiple law enforcement agencies from local to federal authorities are on the scene. The Kootenai County Sheriff says they're ready to neutralize the threat. People near Coeur d'Alene and in western Idaho being told to shelter in place. Officials there saying there are still people trying to leave the mountain. The fire still reportedly burning as the shooting, the search for the shooter continues at this time. I'm Marianne Rafferty. Now back to One Nation.
Media moments that matter.
Okay, the voiceover's done. It's time for me to speak now. It's that time again. The biased media making headlines this week. Like the guy said, you know the title. This week we asked Tommy Lahren to come back. We asked her to watch everything possible, the VCR, the cords, the tapes. And I say, Tommy, just pick up three moments that really matter. Did you do this?
I did it. And you know what's shocking?
What?
The View did not make it this week because the others are so perfect.
Really?
It pushed out the ladies of The View. I'm sure they'll be back next week.
Well, let's see what beat The View.
Okay. Well, we go to CNN. So that's maybe a close second to The View, right?
That's
CNN,
so far.
The View, they're really competing here. But you also have Jamal Bowman. You remember him, right?
Yes.
The fire alarm puller. Well, he has a crazy assessment about racism and its impacts on obesity.
Really?
I call him Jamal Smollett, and you're going to see why. Let's take a look at this clip.
I'm a black man in America. The reason why heart disease.
I'm white, I can't comment.
Listen
on
to what I'm saying. The reason
saying?
Why heart disease and cancer and obesity and diabetes are bigger in the black community is because of the stress we carry from having to deal with being called the N-word.
That is.
What is this, 1860?
A pretty wild assessment. Now you know why I call him Jamal Smollett.
Right.
Not to be confused with Jussie Smollett, but very similar. And he went on to say that, you know, people would call him that or that that's something he experiences on a regular basis, which I find very hard to believe. But again, this man lost his seat. We know that.
Twice.
He was supposed to be one of the members of the squad, and he was pushed out of the squad by voters. But now he's making a pretty crazy assessment there. I'm wondering, you know, if he thinks that that's going to get air in life. Obesity caused by racism.
Tommy, I hope not. I think 4 years ago, people would be taking a knee on Sundays somewhere. But I think we are sobering up out of that. And race cannot be blamed for everything. But you didn't just stop at Jamal Bowman, who lost to Mike Lohr twice, did you?
No. And I love your assessment and your optimism on that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The rest of this list is going to challenge your assessment on how far we've come since the crazy days of 2020. 2020 because of what happened in New York. But I'm not the only one upset about what happened with the Democrat mayoral primary in New York. Chris Cuomo, he's also declaring that the Democrat Party is in trouble because, you know, they didn't choose his brother.
They chose Mondami.
Yes, which arguably probably worse than his brother.
Yes.
But is it the end of the Democrat Party as we know it? I'm not sure, but here is Chris Cuomo on his assessment of that.
You're killing your party. And look, I hope it works out for you. I hope you guys splinter off and become, you know, whatever you really are. Because you're not a capitalist and you're not a Democrat. You are killing your party because you are not a real one. Because you're doing what's good for you in a vacuum with your little social media following. You're no different than a pod bro. And you're killing your party. And Democrats better wake the f*** up and realize that you're better than this. Be with the 80, not the 20. Okay?
Oh, I love the Democrat Party in fighting the snake eating its own tail. I'd also like to point out there, just aesthetically, does he look more muscular and more tan to you?
Well, when you wear a size extra small shirt, everyone looks a little bit more muscular. But, you know, he definitely is fit, but he has to tell everyone every day. It's unbelievable. But I guess he's upset his brother lost, and he lost to a socialist communist who has no track record of success. His brother's got some baggage, I'm sure you heard, but, man, some bitterness there.
That's got a sting, though. It does. The Democrat Party, though, this is going to be the fight that carries on. And I'm here for it. Also because I don't live in New York City.
Yes, you love
so
it.
I don't have a stake in it. And right. I only visit occasionally to see you, Brian. So best of luck to you guys. I'm not the only one, though, that's a little concerned about what's going on. Rapper 50 Cent.
Yes.
And you got to say 50 Cent.
I didn't know that.
Now, he...
But can I just say he's been shot a bunch of times and went to jail?
Yes.
He seems to be out, but he's very productive.
And as a millennial... my favorite rapper by far.
Okay.
So I'll just put that out there. But he was name-checked by Mamdani on The Breakfast Club, so we have to play that first. I don't think he was happy about it, but his name was invoked. Let's take a listen to this.
We're talking about corporations that are making millions of dollars, not in revenue, but in profit. And the second is taxing the top 1% of New Yorkers. We're talking about people who make $1 million a year or more, taxing them just by a flat 2% tax increase. And I know if 50 Cent is listening, he's not going to be happy about this. Mm-hmm.
I point out he didn't say 50 Cent.
Right.
So already not working out. But yes, he said people like 50 Cent are going to be upset by it. 50 was listening. He was watching. He wasn't happy about it. Okay.
What did he tweet?
He put a post out on Instagram. I saw it originally. By the way, a wonderful photo you chose of 50 Cent there.
Yes.
I prefer.
This is high school photo.
Yes. I prefer the Get Rich or Die Trying version.
Yeah.
You can look that up later. But he said, and he's quoting here, "Where did he come from? Whose friend is this? I'm not feeling this plan. No. I will give him $258,000 or $258,750 and a first class one-way ticket away from New York. I'm telling Trump what he said, too."
Right. You know, he doesn't come out and endorse Trump, but he says a lot of nice things about Trump.
He does.
And I think they meet personally, but I would just like to add this. This guy's a capitalist, and he didn't get the black vote. Cuomo got the black vote. So I don't know. He says he's for the poor, but the poor didn't vote for him. People under who make under $50,000 didn't want any part of this guy.
Right. Well, I'm hoping that New York City makes the right decision. And there is no right decision here, but there's a less wrong one. So for your sake, for the sake of 50 Cent,
right.
I hope you guys get it together.
And by the power vested in Tommy Lahren, I thank you so much for that sentiment as you head out to Nashville where you belong. Thanks so much, Tommy. Meanwhile, show me the money. Making it to the pros used to be the goal, but the game has changed thanks to NIL. Auburn coach Bruce Pearl is here on that. Don't move. You're watching One Nation, and that's his headshot.
Your work thrives on a schedule.
The Toronto Raptors select Colin Murray Boyles from the University of South Carolina.
That is so funny. That was one of the funnier moments from the NBA draft this week. South Carolina forward Colin Murray Boyles showing some real emotion after being drafted by the Toronto Raptors, a country he probably doesn't want to go to and a team he doesn't want to play for. But what is not a laughing matter is the declining number of college players entering the NBA draft, thanks to NIL, name, image, and likeness. It's really to blame. Just 82 players appeared on the NBA's list of early entrants, down 49% from 2024. Some NIL packages, by the way, are in the millions of dollars. It's no wonder athletes are happy and willing to skip being a 20-something pick in the NBA and instead stay in school and rake in millions on campus. So what's the real impact of all this? There's a lot of things going wrong downstream. Let's ask a coach who has won 660 times. He's got 22 NCAA tournament appearances and got within a few plays of winning an NCAA title last year, Auburn coach Bruce Pearl. Coach, how do you feel about the new look of college sports and its effect on the pros?
Well, good to be with you, Brian. No, I think it's great because the NCAA was late to the party in taking care of these student athletes. The market said these kids are worth what they're getting. So starting July 1st, for the first time now, universities are going to start being able to write a check to the student-athletes and what they're calling revenue sharing. And then in addition to that, the kids are going to be able to go out there and get real name, image, and likeness. As a result, they don't have to go to the NBA draft and fight their way through the G League and get a two-way contract and be a second-round pick. They can be a little bit more selective. They can stay in college to when they get to the NBA, they got a better chance to be successful right away.
Is it a situation where I'd love to go to Auburn, but Alabama offered me more money? Are you in a money competition?
Yeah, we are, and we're still not in a level playing field. You'd like to think when the ball goes up, both teams are playing by the exact same rules, so you get a true national champion. But we are heading in the right direction. If it was a complete free market as what it was in the years prior, it's really very difficult to sustain that. Ohio State spent $25 million on a football team last year, and they were awarded with a national championship. Not everybody can afford that. And so what these new rules are looking to do is try to get everybody to play a little bit more closely by the same playing field. I think two things still need to happen, though, Brian. I think the Congress needs to get involved and create some antitrust protection so we can sort of get back to the way we used to do it a little bit, but also take better care of the student athletes, or maybe some collective bargaining. But right now, starting July 1st, the law is going to change. The law of the land is going to change. I think we're better off than we were a year ago.
The one thing, Bruce, it's not your problem, but just thinking about the other sports, there's already been 32 Olympic sports who have just got cut from the athletic programs because they're non-revenue generating. They got to put the money into the bigger programs, not enough money for the rowing, perhaps the soccer, the gymnastics, the wrestling. You okay with that?
No, sir, I'm not okay with it, and that's why Congress needs to get involved, because right now it's still very much a free market. Look, football has paved the way to change the way our universities look. Intercollegiate athletics has brought so much diversity to college campuses, women and their opportunities through Title IX to be able to compete in sports. But let's face it, who's going to pay for that? It's going to be football and a little bit of men's basketball. And so right now they can't afford it all. That's why I'd like to see this process is moving forward. It's not fixed, but we're in a better place than we were a year ago.
So, Bruce, I want to talk to you about what everyone else is talking about. People who see you on television talk non-sports say this guy's got other aspirations. He certainly has other talents. Now, with Tommy Tuberville going to become, trying to be the next governor of Alabama, he's going to get it. It opens up a seat in Alabama. Have you been seriously considering running?
I love my country. But I love being the basketball coach at Auburn. And as we're speaking right now, I'm in Atlanta, recruiting players. So, look, these issues matter to me. And it's really not about politics as much as about the survival of our country and what direction that we're looking to move forward. It bothers me to see the Democratic Party moving so far to the left in so many issues. It just... I wake up in the morning, and these are the things I think about as far as the future of my children and my grandchildren. And then, Brian, I'm truly grateful for President Trump and the leadership that he's taking in the Middle East. I mean, right now, it is safer than it's ever been before. And what he's done to join Israel to make sure that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. So many presidents before said it, but never did anything about it. And Israel would have to, on their own, take out what they had in Iraq, or on their own, had to take out what they were in Syria. And President Bush said, listen, they're going to send Scud missiles, but do me a favor, don't retaliate, because there's going to be World War III. Well, there isn't World War III. Right now, the enemy has been really diminished, and I think there's a chance for real peace and prosperity through implementing the Abraham Accords, and we're in a much better place thanks to President Trump's leadership.
You took on the Ayatollah on X. He came out and basically said, hey, I won this war. I did great. And you said, my congratulations on our dear Iran's victory over the regime, he tweets. Liars and terrorists will not be trusted. I pray you keep the ceasefire so people in the Middle East can go on living and build on President Trump's Abraham Accords. But don't think for one second you're fooling anyone. The world knows you still want a nuclear bomb and is watching. Why was that important for you to get it out there?
You know, Brian, I think the ceasefire is tremendous because I think maybe there's an opportunity to get back to some normalcy. And think about this. What about a safe and a secure Middle East? What is that going to do economically for the world, and particularly in partnership with the United States? Look, President Trump is trying to ally himself with winners. A strong, successful, peaceful Middle East means prosperity for everybody. The Ayatollah is a liar. He's a terrorist. Right. He wants Jews dead. He wants Israel destroyed. But his ability to do that right now has been incredibly diminished by Israeli armed forces and President Trump's support. Look, Israel could not have taken out that nuclear threat all by themselves. They didn't have the military capability. President Trump saw the opportunity, had the courage and the moral clarity to do what no other president was willing to do. And as a result, the world is safer. I can't believe the Democrats are sitting there going, well, how badly did they destroy it? How long is it going to be out of operation? Are you kidding me? You better get on board. You better get on board with this and keep your eyes open because I don't trust those. I don't trust them. And we shouldn't trust them.
All right,
but
Coach,
you know what? Let's keep the ceasefire and let's keep the peace.
All right, Coach. I had two topics, one sports, one news. You were good on both, but really good on news. I'm wondering if you're not going to be the next senator from Alabama. I can't wait for your official announcement, even though you said you're not interested right now. Bruce Pearl, thank you. You'd be a great senator. That's me on the record. Thank you, sir. Good luck July 1st. Up next, your sneak peek of the week. And don't forget, follow me on social media, Rumble, Instagram, X, as well as Facebook. You join the Culper Club, you get exclusive content. Don't move. You're watching One Nation. But I will move.
Safe flight repair.
Perfect. All right, time now for your sneak peek of the week ahead. President Trump's big, beautiful bill is facing a July 4th deadline that he put on himself. Senate's got to pass it. House got to look at it. They both got to sign it. The U.S. and Iran are expecting to hold nuclear talks. We'll see what happens. Those things tend to get postponed. And, of course, Independence Day. Celebrations are going to happen in your house, in your town, and for America. We are 249 years young. Next year will be huge, bigger than life. That is it for us tonight. Catch my radio show 9 to noon, Monday through Friday. Got three guests already lined up. Scott Brown wants to be the next senator from New Hampshire. Liz Klayman, Lawrence Jones. Don't forget Fox and Friends. And we got a special visit to the Oval Office on Tuesday. You'll see the interview with Donald Trump and all three of us on Wednesday. Thanks for watching, everyone. Remember, stay within yourself and gradually get undressed.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.